So the next speaker is going to be Nate Kyle, and he's going to talk about the Alaska Center for the Blind, which is our little nonprofit training center here. Nate has been around for a long time. He was hired by the center in about 2016, I believe, and he and I have become like brother and sister. We get along, and sometimes we fight and disagree, but usually we continue to be friends, right?
I would say so.
So the center has had some changes in the past year. So Nate is now the program director at the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and I think he's doing a pretty good job. Most of the time we get along about it. We have our differences, I will say. But
she's part of one of those militant groups, so it makes it difficult.
That's just the nature of Bonnie, I'm afraid.
Thank you for the introduction, Bonnie, and thank you for sharing your story with us. And I'm going to talk about the center. I thought that you guys were going to say, do you want to talk for, 10 minutes? And then I see it was like 45 minutes, but now it's down to 30 minutes. So I'm going to meet in the middle and talk about some of my story, my journey, because it's so intertwined with the center, with Bonnie, and even with the NFB, all these twists and these turns. And I think our stories, our narratives are so important. They're so powerful. And so when I'm going through this, it's not to highlight me. It's to share my journey, because it's powerful when we can connect through shared experiences, even through our narratives. And it's not just me who has a story. Bonnie shared hers. Anil has one. Robert Parsons, who's going to share with you later, who's on here, His story blows me away. Tony, everyone has a story. Everyone is part of this journey that we're on. And so I'm going to take a little bit of time to share mine and then catch you up to date with the center and where we are. As I went through the participants on here, so many people are part of where I am now. These names, and I can go back and reflect on encounters and times that I've been encouraged by everyone here. So even if I don't mention you, you guys are all part of this. So when I was 15, I lost my sight to an accidental gunshot. Probably about 7 months later, I came here to the center for a quick walkthrough. It lasted about 20 minutes. I was gone, and I was off of the map for 10 years. And then when I was 25, I walked through the doors here again at the center. And I came here for 6 months of training, all of the instructional areas, ADL, manual skills, which is our shop, cane travel, braille, and technology. So 10 years between losing my vision and finally getting some training. And in that 10 years, it was kind of a no man's land for me. I mean, I just, looking back, I survived. There was no thriving. And so I went through the training here for 6 months. I picked up some skills. I had the audacity to try and go to college, which I did successfully there. And, looking back, I say successfully because the grades, they were good. But I was doing my reports, my essays, in Notepad. No formatting, no MLA, no APA. And as I reflect upon it, I may have been on the president's list, but it was what we see. It was even professors there having low expectations. Because it was really because I was the blind guy, and they weren't holding me to the same standards as my peers, as my cohorts. I didn't realize that then, but now as I've been an instructor and I teach students throughout the country in class tech, I see it. I see how that bar gets lowered. I see the impact of what I call learned disabilities. Not the blindness, but the way people are treated who are blind, which causes something that even has worse, the effects are worse than the blindness. you know, sometimes we're so accommodated that we leave school like a limp rag, no skills, no backbone, no confidence. And so from 25 to 40, I was off the radar again after I left here. College, businesses. I owned a couple of recording studios, mom and pop convenience stores, tried my hands at some other things. I lived about 10 lives. I even became a licensed massage therapist, was accepted in the BEP program, tons of life experience. And then one day, I happened to come across an ad for a tech instructor here at the center. And I sent in my little resume and didn't hear anything back. But in the interim of kind of that same period, I had got this call from, or it was an email from this lady named Bonnie Lucas. And I remember she had even invited me to a state convention, and I popped in for like an hour. But what that did is it started this relationship that we have now. And so I called her after I put in my resume. I said, hey, I put in the resume. I haven't heard anything back. And she just encouraged me to follow up. And it took probably 3 or 4 months between the time I had put in the resume to the time that I actually was interviewed and then eventually hired. And I was hired probably because there wasn't many other candidates at the time. So I'm back at the center, student at first. Now I'm an instructor. And I remember when I first started working here, it was kind of like a ghost town. All organizations have their seasons, and that was the season here at the center. I remember probably the first week, I don't think I had any students. And I was starting to feel pretty self-conscious, wondering if, you know, what am I getting paid for? And then some students started trickling in, and probably within that first or 2 or 3 months that I was here, it was interesting. I started getting calls from counselors about some of the students that I had worked with, and then some more students were getting sent to us, and I was kind of the low person on the totem pole. I was here part-time. But students were starting to come, and now some relationships were starting to be built with these VR counselors who are part of my story in such a big way, as mentors, as supporters of the center and my life personally. And so we start to see this momentum start to gather. And probably 6 months later, We actually have a schedule, and I mean literally a schedule. When I first came on, we didn't have a schedule. We'd have clients come, and it was kind of reminded me of a bank. A student might come in and go to the front and say, "Well, who are you going to work with?" And someone might say, "Well, I'll work with him." And I was able to put together a little Excel schedule, and that kind of, for me, the acceptance of that schedule with my coworkers, with the manager, was a confirmation that I was doing something right. The calls from the counselor, the feedback from the clients. And then probably 6 months into being here, I was talking to a counselor, and you know, I've been hearing all about this NFB stuff, this NFB convention. I had never even gone to a convention. And we threw out this crazy idea. It was Megan. She's not here right now. She's one of our counselors here in Alaska. Her mother may be here. We said, well, what about taking some youth to Florida? And it looked impossible. I mean, convention, it was right around the corner. And so we were able to get some support from some other counselors. But the idea was so crazy that my manager here at the time said, I don't want anything to do with that. And I was kind of like, so I get carte blanche to do this. And the director at the time said, kind of go for it. Whatever you want to do, go for it. It was kind of like a little daydream. But the next thing you know, we end up taking, you know, over half a dozen youth to convention that year. And at the same time, we were able to get DVR to sponsor some other clients. So that year, we took about 19 or 20 of us all together who went to convention. So boom, we have this momentum. We had never done anything like that at the center. And then we come back and we say, well, what about a youth work program? Okay, well, let's get some blind kids some jobs. And I remember Megan telling me, I thought you were crazy when you told me you wanted to get blind youth jobs. And that's her job because she's a VR counselor. But it's just something that we were so kind of behind in the minutiae of these personality problems and the other barriers that come with bureaucracy and all kinds of other things. But as I'm going through all of this, I'm learning more about myself and my beliefs and the importance of having an open heart, being optimistic, networking, building relationships, and nurturing those relationships. So that's what I'm doing. You know, everyone that I'm meeting, I want to know about them. I want to know if there's anything I can do. And then in return, I see that there's a lot of things that they want to extend that same basket of kindness to me and to the center, because the mission is good. You know, we have a good mission, and we get the personalities out of the way that are saying, you know, I'm the man, or I'm the woman, or you need to talk to me. And that's where everything had stopped. But now we have momentum. And so next thing you know, it goes from, well, I'm the tech instructor to a youth transition coordinator. And that didn't even come because of the center. It came because of two lovely ladies at DVR, Megan and Sue Ellen, who was the head of blind services, who just retired. They actually contacted the director and said, we want you to make Nate the youth transition coordinator. And he said, okay. You guys are one of our biggest customers. You guys, this was successful, bringing all these youth to Florida. It must have brought in about 50,000. It makes sense to me. So now I'm the youth transition coordinator. That moves on. We're getting people. Now they're sending people to the center directly for employment support, which they had in the past, but it took on a different, it took on a different face, because now what was happening is that me as a blind person, I was calling employers, and oftentimes they didn't know I was blind, and then I would show up, and it wasn't this blind guy showing up, it was Nate showing up. And so now the face here at the center starts to look different. And I want to mention, when I first came on, there were 4 blind employees. And now out of the 13 we have, 9 of us are low vision blind. So right now we're the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I think we're going to have to change our name to Alaska Center of the Blind and Visually Impaired, because that's the majority here now. And so next thing you know, I'm the employment specialist, the youth transition coordinator, the tech specialist. And then I move into the position as residential manager, living here at the center. So for our clients to come in from out of town, stay in the dorms, I'm able to be part of that. Now I'm networking with more counselors around the state. And mind you, it's not a Nate thing. You don't do these things unless you have a team, unless you have a team of a group of team players, which includes everyone who was here. You know, of course, there were some differences. You don't move fast. And as Anil said earlier, you can't always be agile and dynamic, which was our goal. There's going to be bumps. But again, trying to have an open heart, trying to be optimistic, trying to network, trying to lead with those things, it ends up clearing the path for more than you would ever think. And so through that iteration over the last 4 years, we were able to do convention again with youth. We started having youth programs, winter programs, spring break program. Last year we had our first camp, Camp Crescendo, where we had a group of blind youth out at a campground just getting crazy, mosquito bites, jumping in the water, rock climbing. And so that's the story of where we came from. And then come March of this year, COVID, we had some changes. Some people decided to leave the organization, and the board came to me and said, would you fulfill this position? And I said, yes. So, but what does that look like? You know, I start here as tech instructor, part-time. Mind you, I have some college, but I'm still a kid with a GED, a lot of drive, and I love people. And now I'm seeing that people believe in me because of these things that I believe in. And so it's not just a blind person, it's bringing these principles to the table. And these principles are the same principles that I see in the NFB. You know, it's this NFB philosophy, living it out. And so COVID hits, and it's kind of like, well, what are we going to do now? And I will tell you that with this team that we have here at the center, with these instructors, with this admin, the managers, we've been able to do it. You know, we have what we call fee for services. Those are our areas where we're instructing people. We're offering our services of Braille, mobility technology, manual skills, ADL. We moved the majority of those over to a virtual platform. And since we've done that, we've actually provided more services since March than we did an average month out of the year when the doors were open. And so that takes a team. And we're doing that with less staff. We're doing that with over around 300 fewer hours of staff a month. We're producing more training. And not only that, we've been able to bring on two instructors who work virtually. Tony, who's with us from Michigan, and another young lady out of Washington. So we're employing other blind people. And I like to say, put it this way, you know, having a small footprint, but making a giant impact. And I think we're living out that philosophy. And that's so important as a nonprofit organization. We don't have a lot of funding. So all the funding we get, we have to put it to the best uses that we can. And right now, fundraising, donations, those are down. So when we're doing our fee for services, we're not living lavish. We're just making sure we keep things afloat. We're meeting our mission statement. We're equipping blind Alaskans to be successful both in life and work. And I would say we're doing it well. And so many people are part of this. It's every client that comes through the door. It's every instructor. It's every DVR counselor. It's the NFP philosophy. Because you know what? At the end of the day, when I look back, I've worked hard, but I have not had to fight. And the reason why is because organizations like the NFB have done most of the fighting. The framework is here. The vehicle is here. I'm in it. But that path, the road, a lot of it has been cleared. And so as a member of the NFB, and as a person here at the center, you know, I want to play my part, because there's still trees that have to be cleared. We still have to make this path level. But I want to go back to the theme. It takes the team. It takes everyone. It takes our stories. It takes us sharing them. It takes us fostering community, understanding that none of us are an island unto ourselves. It takes networking. It takes stepping out and being courageous. And when you put those beliefs, those principles and philosophies, you wear those on your sleeves, I think amazing things can happen. You know, another hat that I wear that's an important hat to me, and it's through the center. The center has been my launch pad and put me in a position to where I had the opportunity to shadow a student with a technology instructor. Her name is Dr. Denise Robinson. She has a company called Your Tech Vision. And one day, a few years ago, she said, Nate, I want you to come work for me. And so I've been able to do that in the capacity as an associate executive director for her in the instructional services. And I'm able to do that on the side, but the launch pad has been the center. The catalyst was this little not named Bonnie to say, keep applying, you know, don't give up, come, keep calling here at the center. And through Tech Vision, when I'm working with students around the country, I'm representing the NFB, I'm representing the Alaska Center for the Blind, everyone who's believed in me, everybody who's believed in this mission, everybody who believes that blind people can live independent lives, be competent, be capable, live the lives that we want, I'm representing that everywhere I go, that philosophy. Through Tech Vision, we have students all over the country, Hawaii. I have five students in Maryland, Baltimore, where Anil is. I received a message a few weeks ago from the Riccobono family saying, hey, can you guys provide instruction for our kids? Because even for people in the NFB, the struggle is real to make sure that our kids get equal access to their education. Not access to accommodations that accommodate them to be under the bar. When it comes to technology, we want our kids to know how to do a pie chart in Excel, know how to do a PowerPoint full of images, know how to communicate and advocate for something like alt text, a text that describes the pictures in their PowerPoints that they receive from their teachers. Know how to use the latest platforms, Blackboard and Canvas, WebEx and Zoom and Google and all of those things, because we live in a sighted world. We become adults, you go to college, you get out in the workforce, you don't have a TVI sitting next to you making sure all your work is accessible. Usually by the time you hit college, you better have a robust set of skills. And so through places, NFB, Center for the Blind, Your Tech Vision, and many other people out here fighting the good fight, we're doing this. And it takes support. It takes us sharing our story. It takes us acknowledging our struggles, but more importantly, our successes and our common ground. You know, I remember hearing a story that a lady shared with me, and it was something that it was a little story that put things in perspective for her. She said, imagine that there's a fence, and on the other side of that fence there's a baseball game, and on this side of the fence there's three people. Two people, they're tall enough to look over the fence and see the game. And then there's a person who's really short. And she said, so what is your definition of access, of accommodating? And someone said, well, cut a hole in the fence. Another person said, well, give that person a box to stand on. And her answer was, take the fence down. Take the fence down. And that's going to look different in different situations. But for me, that's what I want to see. I remember there's a story about Martha's Vineyard between the 1700s and the 20th century. They had this high rate of deafness. One out of 25 people there were deaf. But almost everyone, if not everyone, signed. Even sighted people, I mean, even people who could hear, would sign when they were speaking to one another, or they would just sign. And it was so prevalent that deafness was not a disability. people who were deaf were members of the community, and they were neighbors. It was John, it was Jill, it was Christine. Someone might be short, someone might be blonde, someone might be deaf, but it didn't define them. And that's community. And I think that's what people find when they come here to the center. You know, we have Pam Van Hooser on here. When she's here, she's Pam. You know, when Katie's here, she's Katie. But sometimes we go out into the world and you go to church or go to the store and it's that blind woman, that blind guy. But as we network, as we build relationships, as we provide and receive training that helps us to be confident, when we go out in this world, people start to see us as Nate, as Katie, as Pam, not as that blind person over there. And so we're fighting the good fight, and nothing is wasted. None of the training, none of the hopes, none of the conventions, none of the work, none of it. It's all worth something. So I want to thank you for inviting me here today, Bonnie, and thank you for everything you've done, allowing me to be your friend and everything that we have that's so dear and special. And for all of you, everyone else who's here who, you know, we've had our moments, shared moments that are so important to me, I thank you and I appreciate all of you guys.